Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, Winter.
Hi.
Winter, where are you right now? What's going on in your May? Okay. We got ourselves journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hello there, Guy.
Hello, Margaret. Margaret, you have a very large, prominent eye on your shirt today. What's that about?
I do. I thought it'd be appropriate for our episode this week, which focuses on magic, and this is like a protective eye.
Yeah, yeah. In Jewish tradition, eyes stop people from being able to put curses on you.
That's right. So nobody try nothing in this room.
Exactly.
In the Alan Parsons world.
Right. This is the eye in the sky, a.k.a. my chest.
And we got pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Toxin.
Hey, Guy. Hi, Rocketeers.
Now, Karen, I had the good fortune this week to start reading your book, Why Karen Carpenter Matters. Goddamn, that's a good book.
Thank you. I'm really glad that you like it, and I've been eager for you to read it. I'm so glad you finally found some time to do it.
It's such a fun mix of like pop culture analysis, of course, but also your life and also unpacking the things in between that. Like I you had described it before as a pop culture memoir. I don't think I had realized how much I was going to get of like bio, but also like the truly magical way that analysis goes back and forth between the Philippines and Southern California and Karen Carpenter and Karen Toxin.
I really appreciate you saying that. I've been having a hard time articulating to people how much of it is really a kind of swing between, you know, Karen Carpenter, who's obviously the draw, and then me, who is, you know, the kind of strange post-colonial shadow of this figure. And I'm so glad that you find it entertaining, and I hope that other people are finding it that way too.
It's such a good book. People should like.
Please do buy it.
Get it on Amazon.
I only have two more episodes to shill it, so please, friends, go get it if you haven't already.
It's one of the most fun reads I've had in a while. You guys should check it out.
And did you guys say that you're going to be together?
Oh, yes.
At last.
We're going to be
Friday, on Friday, Book Soup.
Very together the day before this comes out, I think. Yes.
No, this comes out in the morning. Friday morning.
So Friday morning, if you're in Los Angeles, get yourself to fucking Book Soup.
At Karen, 7 p.m.
Karen and I are going to
be
having
together
a conversation. I got some questions. But you guys, we also have a very special guest because, as so many of you probably already know, this is the penultimate episode of Pop Rocket. We got two more episodes, and we thought, since we didn't have much time left together, that we needed to talk to the universe. And so we got ourselves somebody who's good at talking to the universe, Eddie Yates Garcia, also known as the Oracle of LA.
Hello. Ooh.
Hello. Amanda, what should people know about what you do?
Well, that's a big question. I think I'll just state the obvious. I mean, as a lot of psychics and oracles do. So I have a podcast called Strange Magic, where we talk about tarot and magic and mystical things, pop culture as well. I also have a book coming out in October called Initiated, Memoir of a Witch. Ooh. And that's all about, you know, personal empowerment and finding your way out of the underworld, dealing with trauma, and
it's so good. I'm blazing through it right now, guys, and you need to get this on pre-order.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then I professionally earn my living as a witch. So,
all right, Amanda, you got a favorite herb or spellcasting reagent we should know about?
A favorite herb.
Yeah, if you were an herb or reagent of some sort, what would you be?
Well, you know what herb I think is really great is rosemary. I think it's like underloved, underutilized, because rosemary grows all over in Los Angeles. Most people have it in their yard, and you can use it for so many things. Like, you can, you know, there's a whole controversy right now around sage, right? Because, you know, it's over harvested, and there's this controversy about whether or not, like, you should use it if you're not, like, Tongva or Chumash person. Mm-hmm. But rosemary is something that's available to all, and it has a similar kind of scent and clearing property as sage does. And it's also very empowering. It's an herb of Jupiter, so you can put it in money spells. You can put it in love spells. You can put it under your pillow. This is a
You can stuff it in
herb.
A chicken.
And you can stuff it in a chicken. You can put it in the bath, yeah.
That's great. And also, everyone is so weirded out by just eating the things that grow around us. Like, it's weird to be in LA surrounded by like rosemaries and fig trees
and random fennel on the side of freeways.
Yeah. Well, fucking Berkeley is like nothing but fennel and no one's doing anything with it. And I'm like, again, does someone have a chicken? You know?
Right.
And Amanda, if anyone wants to professionally engage you as a witch or oracle, where would they be able to do that?
You can find me at my website, www.oracleoflosangeles.com, or Instagram, Oracle of LA, Facebook, Mandy Ace Garcia. I'm on Twitter. I should go on Twitter more often. It just seems like, oh my God, there's so much social media to do. It takes so much time, and there's other things I want to do.
Yeah, and I feel like your Instagram is where it's really at. Like, that's where my energy is like most concentrated.
But if you really want to, you should sign up for my mailing list, because, like, for instance, tomorrow morning, I'm putting out a mailer that has a tarot spread that you can use to get over self-doubt.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, coming up on this week's show, we're going to be talking about witches, healers, psychics, and magic in pop culture. Plus, we're each going to be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what's in store for all of us as we leave the warm bosom of Pop Rocket. Margaret, you're the person who brought Amanda to us. Why did you think this was the right idea for this episode?
Well, Amanda is one of my oldest and dearest friends in Los Angeles, and I have seen her on this journey of becoming a witch, and it's been really powerful and personally empowering for me to see her just gain so much like wisdom and clarity. And I've had several sessions with her, and I've always walked away from those sessions feeling really grounded, really like open to possibility, really joyous. And in fact, there was one time where Amanda led this ceremony with maybe like 10 or 15 of us. And it was around, I think, Valentine's Day. Mm. And it was all for people like working through some love stuff. Mm. And I had just gotten out of this relationship with this absolutely horrible dude. And when I went through that ceremony with Amanda, and I was like bawling through most of this ceremony, let me just say, and everybody was bawling through most of the ceremony. It was extremely powerful. Like, the energy in the room was so clearing and so honest, and everyone was so bonded. But after I got out of that ceremony, like, a major chunk of that, like, grief from that breakup, like, fell off of me. It was
awesome.
Amazing. So I wanted to share her with the Rocketeers, because they are my favorite coven ever. And, yeah, Karen also
heard about her. Literally within a couple of days of getting the news that we weren't going to continue, a dear one of my oldest friends told me that, you know, I should see the Oracle of LA. She said, and then she specified your name, but she said, you need to see the Oracle of LA. I think that it's an important time for you to go there. And so I'm just sort of like, oh, well, cool, what else? And then sure enough, you know, there are a lot of changes afoot, and I was going to seek you out anyway, but I'm so thrilled that the universe manifested you right here with us.
Amanda, can I ask you a stupid question?
Yes, please.
You're an oracle. One of the most old school things that an oracle can do is smell noxious gases that come up from the earth and like prophesy from that. We're in one of the rare American cities that like has the La Brea tar pits.
Mm.
Have you ever thought about pulling like an old school Pythian, like see what the gases tell you?
Oh my God, you are a fucking genius, and I cannot believe that I haven't thought of that before. Like, seriously,
that's a really
I need
good
to
one.
Do that.
Thank you.
I will thank you in my show notes.
I would be very excited to see that. Here with us, you're going to do a tarot reading, right?
Yeah. I'm going to pull cards for each of you if you want to.
And you said that we had the option of going with either a random draw or a soul card.
That's right.
I'm not familiar with those terms. Can you tell us what that means?
Yeah. Well, so if we do a random draw, then it's just like you can ask a question. That, you know, usually when you ask a question, you're just going to get a more specific answer. I mean, all the tarot readers do it differently. But when you ask a specific question, you tend to get a more specific answer. Or you can just be like, let's see what spirit has to say. Right. And then spirit will reflect back at you whatever it is that it feels like it wants to talk to you about. Or you can do your soul card. And so your soul card is calculated via your birth date. And that essentially, for me, what I think of the soul card is like your program at grad school. So Margaret and I were in the writing program at CalArts together. Or, you know, you could be in the nursing program or you could be in the physics program. But if you have, when you calculate your soul card, then you'll be like, throughout this lifetime, I am in the chariot program or I am in the high priestess program, which means your soul has a natural affinity for that archetype, but it hasn't mastered it yet.
Okay.
So you're sort of working your way through it, you know?
And what do you think people, like, what should people look to a tarot reading for? Like, what?
Great question.
What, how is it guiding us? How is it informing us?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, there's a lot of schools of thought on this. Like, some people are going to say, oh, this is, like, divination that is going to tell you about the future, and this is, like, supernatural in nature. Other people who are also tarot readers are going to say, you know, no, it's more of like a random narrative device to tell a different story about your life than you're used to telling. For me, it doesn't really matter whether or not it's supernatural or whether it's completely random. And in fact, my personal belief is it's both.
Uh-huh.
You know, like sometimes you really feel the spirit come in and say something, like when it has something really powerful to say. And sometimes it feels more like a reframing that you might use as like an artistic device, like pulling a card or whatever, and then like making a story up based on that. But really, it's a way of looking for opportunities that maybe you didn't know were available to you or obstacles that maybe you hadn't thought of before. It's essentially a tool that has been around for about 500 years that's used as a lens to look inside your life, look inside the mystery of your life and find new and surprising things.
Has anyone here had a tarot reading before?
Well several, yeah. With Amanda, yeah. And other tarot card readers, yeah.
Have you done it one?
Yeah, I have, like multiple times. I just did one in New Orleans.
Ooh, how was that?
She was really insightful, but the last three times that I've done it, they've said my third eye is staring at them, so it makes it uncomfortable for them.
Wow. Wow. So. That sounds apropos.
Yeah.
The last three times that you did it, they said that the
last three different people were like, your third eye is like really intense. So it makes them feel uncomfortable. And I don't know if it's debatable what they're actually intonating at that point.
Yeah. Well, my new moon is in Leo, so I really like being looked at.
Yeah. So. Yes.
So yeah. I'm going to
Amanda
it.
Can handle it.
I mean, yeah.
You know, the thing is, like, I am so intrigued by the whole process, but part of me is because of my family's own long relationship with the whole process. My grandmother used to get a weekly mani-pedi and a tarot reading in
Ooh,
the Philippines.
That's a big sell.
Yeah, that's glamour.
I mean, she was a very like amazing woman. So she would get her weekly mani-pedi and her tarot reading from the same person. On top of that, there was a lot of Catholic mysticism, like sort of layered on top of that. Right. And I think that for me, growing up, there was so much emphasis placed on the fundamental truth of the kind of predictiveness on all of the different layers of, I don't want to say superstition, but like the mythos that was built around these different encounters or touching across these boundaries of the real and the fantastic or whatever. And so it's scared the shit out of me, frankly, most of my life. And every time I've had one in my adult life where I'm like, okay, I'll let you do a reading, like, you know, different friends do it, or I see various people, it feels like it comes at a very transformative moment in my life. Mm. And it often indicates a major shift. And so in the middle of a major shift right now, I'm just sort of like, ooh, I don't know what's going to happen. So anyway, so I'm excited and yet also filled with trepidation. Mm, about what's
going to happen. So maybe your question would be something like, what is the way, like, what do I need to do or what do I need to know in order to make it through this shift feeling the most empowered and grounded and happy? Or what can I learn through going through this process? Or
it's true. I get very scared of everything, because I'm also like, I had a friend who read palms at one point, which is like, if you choose this lifeline, blah, and I'm just like, I can't. So, you know, anyway, I will now shut up and just kind of meditate on a question here while you all like kind of decide what you're going to do next.
Margaret, do you want to start us off?
Oh, I think we do need to talk about the fact that Karen was called by a whole different type of oracle, Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, that's a very good point. Yeah.
What does that portend, people?
She's going to win the election.
Tell everybody the story.
Okay, so, I mean, randomly today, I got a phone call while I was, you know, getting ready to, I don't know, clean the cat litter box. And it said Brookline, Massachusetts. I'm like, huh, what if that's Elizabeth Warren? Picked it up. And sure enough, it's like, hello, Karen. And it was. And I was like, oh, my God. And, you know, honestly, Catherine Spires, a friend of Pop Rocket, of Smart Mouth, you know, received a phone call from Elizabeth Warren and was like, Grandma? And it was just like, oh my God, it's happening to me. And also April Wolf, I guess, got a call that like went to voicemail because she was driving. Anyway, somehow Elizabeth Warren is stalking the podcast ladies of Los Angeles. And
Lizzie,
she,
call me.
Yeah,
call
she reached us. Me. She reached me and we had a really wonderful conversation. And it, as I said, and you can read the whole Twitter thread I posted about it because I was freaking out, it was a real conversation. It wasn't like a, you know, hey, I'm calling to thank you for your support. It was like, how are you feeling today? What's, you know, what are you thinking about? Like, what are your concerns? You know, and her answers to me were not canned answers. They were very thoughtful, engaged responses to the things that I was actually saying at that moment. And you know, I don't know, that felt like an incredibly amazing and healing experience amidst the torture, the painful news that we get every other minute, and especially with women's reproductive rights these days. So it's just sort of like, anyway, so thank you, Elizabeth Warren, for calling. And, you know, I have several friends. I guess it worked because I have several friends who are like, I'm going to donate now. Just to
you know, yeah, I mean, even before your call, I just signed up with a monthly donation. Mm-hmm. Hint, hint, Elizabeth Warren. I'm in it to win it for you.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's amazing. Amanda, what should Karen take away from having this, if not higher power, senatorial power reaching out to her in this moment?
I think it means that you are favored to do more political work in your professional career.
Dear goddess. Oh, I'm just trying to get out of that. But okay. I'm going to retreat in my corner while everyone else deals with their questions.
Margaret, since you know Amanda best, you want to start us off?
I do. So I know everyone is going to choose whether they want an individual card or a soul card. I know what my soul card is, and I've had readings to do with that before, and it's actually really lovely, but I am going to ask for an individual random pull.
Great. Okay, so let me just pull out my trusty cards
here. There are cards being shuffled.
Yeah.
They're very large.
Is it the
Crowley deck?
No, I didn't bring that deck because although I've been reading with it a lot lately, it's quite stern. It's got quite a stern personality. And if anybody gets nervous around tarot, it's really not the deck. This is the Rider-Waite-Coleman-Smith, which does have some problems with it, but it is the most commonly used deck and kind
Why
of the
would you
most
bring
plastic.
A problematic deck to this?
It's true.
because well, that's a great question.
Yeah. I want to know. That's not what I need right now.
Well, she means historically problematic.
Yeah, I mean that
don't need the history of it either.
Yeah. Well, I mean
they're all problematic, honestly.
I think they all are, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose I should have brought a different deck.
It's okay.
Yeah, I brought this one because I just thought that it would be the kind of most commonly like seen by people, and so it would be the least threatening. And some of the other ones that I use are I'm kind of trying to phase this one out, but I use it a lot as a teaching deck, and it's the one that's most commonly used.
It's a good
used
entry
teaching
point.
Deck. Yeah. I mean, the problems with it are really about the fact that it, you know, it comes from the Order of the Golden Dawn. And so
I'll tell you a story about that deck, that type of deck, after we've done this.
Okay. Okay. Great. Well, I'm interested to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay. So
do you think I should ask a question or should I just go for what the spirit has to tell me?
Well, if you have a burning question, then you might want to...
Come on, Magwops.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will ask the deck, as I transition out of Pop Rocket, mm-hmm. how can I still communicate my love for the community we've built and also pop culture in general? Because it is going to cut off, like, one of my limbs, you know? And that's actually been really, like, since the show has been canceled... I have been thinking about all these things that I was going to talk about in a month or talk about in a few weeks or whatever. And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm not going to have that anymore. And it's sad. And like, I mean, I was preparing myself for that already, but still, I'm almost in denial about it. And I feel like I need some tools for like how to get through that transition, how to like still communicate what I love and still have this community with me.
Aww.
Swish and I are making hard eyes at each other.
That's so beautiful. So it sounds like your concern is really about staying connected to the community, even as you transition out of this specific incarnation.
Like exactly. This feels like one incarnation, but I don't think it's the end. Right. I don't feel like it's the end.
Right. Okay. So I'm just going to hold them like this, and then you can just feel your way through and just let your...
Ooh.
Popping over here.
Yeah. Okay. So she is running her fingers along the cards and she's pulling.
Which one? Okay.
She's got it. Oh, well, this is really interesting. Okay. So she's pulled the Ten of Swords, which some people might say has a kind of creepy look to it, but that's okay. We're just, it's not serious. And so. The Ten of Swords shows a picture of a man lying on the earth.
As they do sometimes.
And he's got all these swords lined up in his back. And basically, he looks like he's been stabbed all along his spine.
And this is a happy card. No, guys, it's happy.
Yeah, this is happy. Okay, so the Ten of Swords... In the background, you see the sea of blue, and then there's these mountains in the back of that, and then above that, there's like a yellow sky. Mm-hmm. And then above that is like a blackened sky. So the colors are very prominent in the card.
It's a beautiful card.
But tens always symbolize the end of a cycle and the beginning of a new cycle.
Interesting.
And because it comes like after the nine, and then you start again at one, only this time now you are... wiser, you've been through a whole bunch of experiences, right? Like you've been doing something already. So you've already gained the wisdom that you would get through going through a whole process, but now you're starting again at a new process, right? Mm. And so one of the things that it's asking you to think about is what did you learn from being in the community that you're in from the moment that you began Pop Rocket? And keeping in touch with the community, you've probably grown quite a lot in your ability to do that. And if you were going to go back and begin again at Pop Rocket, how would you do things differently? Mm. What would you remember? Like, what would you think about from this time that you'd been here? Like, if you could go back and give yourself some advice, which I would like to hear in just a second. But so, so I'd like to hear what you would tell yourself, because that's a good way to process through the information. But there's also a quality specifically in this card. You know, I kind of think of this card as like someone at a battlefield who's maybe been killed at the battle. Mm-hmm. And there's more for this soul to do, but it can't kind of linger around the battlefield hoping that it can like win this fight, right? This fight is done. And they didn't win. He didn't win this one. So, but I always find that as quite a relief, like when I get this card personally, because then I can be like, okay, I'm going to move on now. Mm-hmm. Like it's, the door is closed on that. Like it's not like maybe we can resurrect, but it's like, no, this is that chapter is closed and it's time to move on. Wow. And so, you know, there's also, because it's coming up through the spine, there's also this, you know, in the more new agey versions of the deck, mm-hmm. There's like Sometimes they have the chakras like mm-hmm. lit up. So there's something about working through your energy centers, getting your energy really aligned, like really focusing on the kind of energy that you want to bring to whatever project is the next thing, and really considering that in terms of like how you introduce your voice to the next project. So, you know, because the swords are really about voice, you know, they're really about intellect, they're about words, they're about language, they're tools of the East. But, because the East is associated with breath and with air, and therefore also with language and with words for a lot of other reasons, too, which I'll spare you right now. But before we close off on you, I would love to hear what you learned in this process of being here as far as engaging with an audience and building that audience, and what you like, what advice you would give to yourself if you went back.
I would definitely tell myself in show one, show two, etc., like, be yourself unabashedly, no apologies, right. What you love, embrace it, talk about it, own it, want it, be it. Because I think in the beginning and at times, I think whenever, and I've struggled with this in prior pop culture iterations, you know, working as a journalist, reviewing music, writing about books, etc. Like, sometimes it's hard to like go against the sea tide, you know, and to say like, actually, I think this has problems, or actually, I really like it. That can be hard to own. So I think I would go back and just reinforce that message to myself. But, you know, thinking about the card and some of the things you brought up, like, you know, the show did get canceled, but I also, you know, resigned, so to speak, before the show got canceled. And part of it was because of battle fatigue. You know what I mean? I almost felt like I had done all the work I could do in this kind of setting. Yeah. And I was actually hoping I would leave and somebody would take my place, somebody who was new to the battle, fresh to it. But that didn't happen. But nevertheless, I have that battle fatigue, I think. And right now I feel this need to like tuck down, go into my novel, like channel my voice into other things. But I still want, you know, like I started this whole question with, I still want that connection. Like, I don't want to lose it, but it has to change forms.
Yeah. Well, so how do you want to express that voice now when you go forward? Like, with like, do you want to do it through social media, or maybe you have a newsletter, or do you want to just channel it specifically into a larger project like your book? Or?
Well, I mean, I think I will plead the fifth a little bit, because I still want to like gather some information about what's the best steps. But I definitely want, I mean, social media is an obvious like connector, and that's the way I'm connected to the people most of the time. But then also, yeah, like the book, I am thinking of it so far in terms of just like really communicating and bringing in like a broad circle of people. And we'll see about the rest of it. Newsletter, interesting asterisk there.
Well, but that's really interesting. Like, it just seems to me like this idea of you really just not being apologetic at all about your voice, you know, and really committing to whatever it is that you're into is the secret for the next step.
Thank you, Amanda.
Wow.
My pleasure.
Wow, striking.
All right. Winner, do you want to go next?
I picked the random card.
Okay. Great. All right. So,
do you want to ask a question, Winner?
No.
You just want
what the spirit wants to say. All right.
Okay.
If the spirit moves you, let it groove you.
Ooh, I like the singing while you do it. Do you want to just go through and pick out one that feels right to you?
Winter is staring. She's taking the first card off.
Wow.
Okay. Nice. Okay. So, King of Pentacles. This card, okay, so kings are always about taking responsibility, right? King is the person after which no one, like, there's no one else to go. These cards were created in the beginning of the 20th century, but they're based off stuff that's going back into feudal times, right? And so in feudal times, the king was like the top, that he couldn't go and ask anybody else, what else do I do, right? He had to sort of figure it out on his own. And so there's a real feeling with this card of being like, you know, if you want something, then you have to just really take responsibility for creating that thing that you want yourself. Mm. This card in particular relates to work, money, the body, right? Because Pentacles always is about things that we can touch, things that we can feel, specifically our resources and often our work. Another thing about the King that I really like is that the King of Pentacles is also, well, all kings in this tarot deck are like visionaries, right? Like they're like creating a vision for what they want, and then they're taking responsibility for going off and creating that thing themselves. The fact that you pulled this card and it's upright in particular is really promising, because you can look, if you look at this card, you see this king and he's in this throne and he's covered in greenery and grapes, and he's got bulls all over his throne, which are like from the suit of Taurus. And Taurus is, you know, we're in the season of Taurus right now, and Taurus is all about resources. Taurus is all about creating beauty, creating luxury, creating security. And so, you know, reflecting on what security would really mean for you, and then really going out and making that happen. And what this says is that you have that. You have that. Like, you can do that. You've got that, you know? Like, you are empowered to go create this beautiful, new, rich life for yourself. Yeah?
Oh. Winner is getting emotional because this is hitting right on.
And are you okay, Boo?
But this is like, I mean, if I can just jump in for a second, like, I feel like this is such a good, beautiful reading for you, because like, in addition to my own, like, you know, change and journey while making this show, I've been thinking about yours and all of us, and like, you've been searching for home like the whole time, you know, and like, you found it with Alan and you found it with your work, and like, now it's all just a case of like, creating even more security, creating even more like wrapped comfort around you.
It's not been secure.
What do you mean?
It's not been secure. It's the last 3 months have been terrible.
But besides that,
this is like the cherry on top of everything, the show canceling.
Yeah.
And, you know, other things can be, look, Alan, obviously, this is not about my marriage at all, but like, you know, other things have not been necessarily secure. And a lot of it has to do with what other people's version of security is. And everybody's version of security, you know, the work that I do, like, that means something different to them.
Yeah.
And you don't factor into their matters of security. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you can in a certain way, but at the end of the day, you're an employee.
Right.
And I've long since not felt like I want to be anyone's employee.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to work for people. I don't want to have my words be used by other people anymore, which is the bulk of my job.
Yeah.
Because they get everything.
Yeah.
And I get nothing.
Right.
But like money. And money is not enough for me. Mm. So it's just been really upsetting for the last 6 or 7 months, because I'm at the behest of these people. Mm. I'm at the behest of this network. Mm. And it's not fair for me to be able to have my voice be pushed through something and not have control of it. Mm. So that's why I'm crying, because I'm tired of people benefiting off my voice.
Winner, yeah. I didn't mean to be presumptuous with what I said before. I was thinking a lot about you and Alan. Really.
No, that you're not being presumptuous at all. Okay. That's been like the most security I've had. But at the same time,
yeah,
he doesn't know what the fuck I do.
But also,
he doesn't get it. He's like, he's clueless about what actually the emotions that go into like being this kind of person. He doesn't know.
But in terms of the reading, and I'm sorry to interrupt, Oracle, but I mean, part of what I think is so very heartening about the reading is that, from what I gathered of your interpretation of the card, is that it is the moment. This is the moment ascend to that throne of abundance of grapes and whatnot. And it's just like, and you get to choose. Mm-hmm.
This is the moment where you decide to go into business for yourself.
I did go into business for myself.
No, I mean, it's a different
maybe
iteration.
Yes.
Because, okay, here's the thing. Like, this is an example that I often
use. Like, it stabs me in my heart how much I've put into making other people sound great.
Yeah.
It's like painful.
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating at all. Mm. It's literally gut-wrenching.
Well, yeah. If you feel like you're putting a lot of energy into something and pouring your spirit into something that someone is taking for granted and not celebrating you for and not supporting you for and just expecting more and more and more from you, then of course that's going to be really painful.
Yeah.
And I feel like this card is really encouraging you, even if, you know, like we start businesses and sometimes they don't go the way that we want them to go. Mm-hmm. But I believe in you. And I believe that, you know, this is a signal from spirit saying that you can create something for yourself that is sustainable, where you don't have to say, you don't have to be beholden to anyone and no one can exploit you. And I mean, like, that's how I started to do this business that I'm in now. It's because I was like, I don't want anybody to be able to take anything away from me. If I do something, I want it to be because, like, I say so. I want it to be down to me.
Exactly.
Like, not down to whether or not anybody else gives me permission.
Exactly.
And so that's what I love about the King. I mean, that's the hard thing about being in your business for yourself, right? Is like, if it fails, there's no one for you to turn to. But on the other hand, like, if it succeeds, you don't have to like give all your money to some other person, right? Like you have to be the one that answers for everything. But on the other hand, it's like, it's all your decisions. It's all your creative energy. If you don't want to do something, you don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, so I feel like this card is really a big vote.
I get Pentacles a lot.
Yeah.
I've been getting Pentacles every month for the last 2 years.
Because I feel like abundance is coming into your life. And maybe it's when you really say, that's it. I'm never doing this again.
That's basically been how I felt since January.
Yeah.
It's the $2 so left done. To give card.
I'm just zero fucks. Yeah. I'm so over it. Yeah.
Where
I'm
is
over
the
rich people problems.
Give no fucks tarot deck.
Yeah.
Should be right. I should have brought the give no fucks tarot deck.
Thank you.
No,
thank
it's
you.
A pleasure.
Thank
it's
you.
A pleasure.
Oh, I have to face my demons and fears.
Yes, face them.
Okay, I will, you know, I know that we're all asking about these, and it's natural. I guess it's part of the consequence that we are asking about our next steps, next phases. But I'm also in a big moment of like potential professional transition beyond Pop Rocket, beyond these things. It's just sort of like, where can I take the energy that's building next? Right. That is the question that I want to ask. Where can I take the energy that's building in all the many sectors of my life? Where do I take it next? What strength do I have to see that forward?
Ooh, yeah, I like that question. Like, where is your power in all of this?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to, like, stand up.
Okay.
Because...
Karen, take your time.
I'm just going to do this one because that's the one I was drawn to. Oh, that looks... Oh, it's the devil!
I knew you were going to get that.
Hell, oh, my goddess!
I knew you were going to get that because of what you had said
card.
Before.
Wait, oh, no!
No, oh, yes.
Okay. I'm scared now.
Yes, Karen, don't be scared.
We don't need to
okay,
be
guys,
scared
I just
devil.
Literally pulled the devil card. Can I just, like, describe it momentarily? It's just like, well, someone who is a body type very similar to me, who's her suit at the bottom. And has like a man and woman in chains, like at its feet, holding.
Like
a
but
chain.
You did get the Karen in Palm Springs.
I mean, okay,
you did get the devil card reverse, so
it's a reverse.
Yeah,
so it was upside down.
Yeah, it was upside down. So
well,
I feel like
it has a meaning. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I feel like the devil card is turning around.
Is
for
it
you.
About power? Okay, go ahead.
Oh,
go ahead.
Yes, okay. It is about power.
Yes, Lord of the Rings. Here we go.
So much to say about this really deep and intense card, right? So, okay, first of all, you guys are a pop show. So, have you seen that movie Labyrinth?
Yeah.
Oh, you remind me of the babe. Yeah. What babe? Yeah. The babe with the power.
Oh, great. We got the song. Okay. So, in my mind, David Bowie is the devil in that movie, right?
Okay. Not too shabby.
Not too shabby for the devil.
I like this.
And so, okay, so the movie is about how the protagonist gets like abducted, or she goes into the labyrinth to rescue her brother. And do you remember the final scene where you know, he's like throwing up all the illusion. He's like, come with me. You need to come with me. You need to like be seduced to the dark side of the force. I'm mixing metaphors, mm-hmm. but
yeah,
you get my point. And then she has this dawning. She has this awakening where she's like, you have no power over me. Do you remember that mm-hmm. scene?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She says, you have no power over me. And then he like looks at her with these wide eyes and he's like, shit, she figured it out. And then the whole labyrinth around her, him crumbles and she's back, you know, in Kansas, basically. So the point with that is, you know, devil is always about power and about recognizing that you are the one who has the power and not giving in to your fear. So usually what's happening with the devil, you know, the way that the devil works in literature, for instance, mm-hmm. is like, the devil appears in the book or in the movie in order to try and seduce the protagonist away from their true path in life by presenting them with all these opportunities that ultimately end up not being what they really want. But the devil is like, see, you can have fame, you can have money, you can have stardom. Just sign your name right here and you can have all of that. But what's so important to remember when the devil comes up is really about connecting with your heart and what you truly want, not letting yourself be seduced by the possibilities, or furthermore, and especially by your fears, right? So oftentimes the devil will be like, if you don't take this job, this might be the last job that you're ever going to get, so you better take it.
Mm.
But that's like
the principles of scarcity.
Right. The principles of scarcity. Exactly. So that's like you're running or like that's where the devil is like a bull that's chasing you through the streets and you're not deciding where you go. You're just running from wherever he chases you. You know, you're just going away from him. So what you want to do is transform your fears into desires. And then when you transform your fear into a desire, that's when you start becoming more empowered. I'll give you an example. What's one of your biggest fears about leaving the show and about like moving on in your life?
I mean, I think that the biggest fear about, I mean, I don't know, leaving the show is abandoning the conduit to a world outside of the smaller professional circle that I've mostly monastically devoted my life to, which is academia, and that pathway to other worlds and other universes and people will be closed off without this conduit. And I'll then just be back toiling in the kind of same feudal structure that academia has created.
So that is such a beautiful example. Your fear is that once this door closes, once you like close out on this final episode of Pop Rocket, like that's it for you mm-hmm. in this world, mm-hmm. right? And so the fear is, I won't get it. What if I never get another opportunity to be in what would we call
this? Well, it's just a public forum.
What if I never get an opportunity to be in a public forum? That's the fear. Mm-hmm. But if we transform that into a desire, then your desire is, I desire to have a voice in a public forum. Whereas if we're like, I'm afraid I'll never get another opportunity. Then it's like you're just sitting around waiting for opportunities to come to you.
You
right?
go take that shit.
Yeah. Whereas if you're like, I desire to have a voice in the world of media, then you will have that because you will make sure that that is happening. And so one of the things that we're doing when we're deciding, when we're noticing our desires, is we're really focusing on our intention. So if you clarify that intention, then the devil can't fuck with you. He can't pull you off because you're not just operating from a place of fear of like, what if I'm not allowed to do the thing that I want? But if you clarify what I really want is to have that voice, then you will have that voice. You will create that voice. You will start your own podcast. You will go on to do other things. You will write more books. You will make sure that you do that because that is going to be a number one priority for you.
Hashtag hustle. I'm down with it. This is why my friends told me to talk to you.
Yeah, exactly.
So thank you so much, Oracle of Los Angeles.
That is my great pleasure.
I feel some sense of like, oh God, one of us should do their soul card. But no, I want to do a random draw and find out what the spirits have to say.
Although, Guy, I will say that I feel like your soul card, I, at some point, get a reading on your soul card.
Okay.
I feel like it, there's some stuff. There's some, like, the hermit, it just feels like... I had a year where the hermit was coming up
this
for me
is my,
all the time.
This is a hermit year.
Yeah.
You can calculate and, your year birth years.
No, I mean, I don't know anything about tarot, but when I saw the hermit, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, the hermit is all about... You know, like forging your own way and making your own connection to the divine instead of going through the conduits that are like permitted to you. But instead, it's about forging your own personal relationship with spirit, going your own way, one might say. OK, so but you're going to do a random draw and you just want to uh-huh. see what spirit has to say to you.
Yes.
Oh, so this is so interesting. Winter, you got a king, and you got a queen.
I got a queen.
Yeah, okay, so you got the Queen of Swords. Oh my God, I love this card so much. You know, it's really funny because when I first started learning, I mean, when I, you know, first started to really get back into tarot, I understood this idea of kings, right? Like they go out, they conquer. It's a very outward-directed energy, and they always say about queens, well, queens are inward, they're internal. And I was like, what kind of bullshit is that? Like, that's not important. Like, that's like, why would we care about that? You know, oh, internal decisions that we're making. But it's not about that. What I love about it is that queens don't need outside confirmation of what they know inside to be true. So, like, a queen doesn't need awards, you know, she doesn't need accolades, she doesn't need anybody else to say, you're good enough, right? She knows because inside of herself, she has a sense of what is true for her. And that is particularly true of the Queen of Swords, because the Queen of Swords brings insight and awareness and clarity wherever she goes. What I love about the Queen of Swords is when she walks in a room, her voice brings truth. Like, her voice cuts through all the bullshit. She's kind of like, even, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Gordian knot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like Alexander might have been actually a woman. Because, okay, so
tell us what the Gordian knot is.
Okay, so the Gordian knot, if I'm remembering the myth correctly, is Alexander the Great, who was like conqueror of the world, you know, united all of the, you know, Fertile Crescent in northern Egypt.
You're speaking one of Guy's love languages, by the way, right now.
Like, very true.
Yeah, like feudal history. Yes. Like, boom.
This is it's ancient Greek history, but so, and he was very young when he does all this, right? He died at 33. He managed to, like, conquer the whole world. But so there was a prophecy that whoever could untie the Gordian knot would become the ruler, the leader of the world. And it was this big knot, like, you know, a huge, like, mess of a knot. And all these people came from all over to try and untie it. And they couldn't. Like, they would try and try and try, and it just wouldn't happen. And then Alexander came in. I was like, I'm going to show you. And he whips out his sword and he just cuts it. He's like, problem solved. That knot is done. And I feel like there's something about that in this card. You know, like, she is just like, I clarify that. And, you know, so her one thing that she has to be careful with, her shadow side, is when she's using words to harm or to obfuscate or to manipulate, because she's very skilled in her use of language, mm-hmm. right? So she could bring pain to people. She could she could be like a great like spinner, like a political pundit or something who's like spinning things to make people get confused, like a propagandist in a way. Mm-hmm. But instead, what you're being called to do when you have the Queen of Swords comes up for you is to really get clear on what the truth is for you and what it is that you really want to say and what issues in particular you really want to bring clarity to. So that also, by considering what you really want to speak on, brings about a transformation. She has butterflies all in her throne, which, you know, butterflies are symbols of transformation. Mm-hmm. And so if you consider the truths that you want to speak, like, what is it that you feel like nobody else is saying? You know, like, what is it you feel like you wish somebody was saying because there's something that's going on within yourself that you feel like needs to be said and expressed, that will lead to your revelation, that will lead to your transformation, that will lead to your emergence from the chrysalis and becoming the butterfly?
I've felt very sort of like clouded about what I wanted to say. Like, one of the other things I do is stand up, and I have been in a place where I've been just sort of like clouded, I think, since the election, of just sort of like, I don't know what my opinion is. How am I supposed to go and sort of like say, you know, what I think of the world when I don't know what I think of the world?
Yeah.
So I'm very pleased that the queen is in my life.
Yeah.
And I hope she starts slicing through some of that miasma and helping me move towards the butterflies.
Well, you know, though, I feel like that in itself is a real truth. And I think that it's probably touching on something that a lot of people feel. You know, like, a lot of us feel paralyzed. Like, we don't know what to say. We don't feel like nothing feels adequate. You know, we're not sure what front to fight on. We're not sure if our problems are relevant to all the larger social issues that are going on. So it might feel inappropriate to talk about like what's going on in our life when there's like such crazy suffering and turmoil happening and everything feels like it's about to kick off. But I think that if you get into actually the truth, like the fact that you don't even know what to say is part of that truth, right? Is about recognizing and naming that feeling. And the more honest you can be, instead of thinking about what will get laughs, what should I say? That's like the king is like, what do they want? I'm going to provide my people with that.
Yeah.
Whereas the queen is like, what is my truth? What is the truth that I'm really seeing inside myself? And how can I communicate that?
Like, I've had a very hard time writing jokes for a while, and I started a couple of weeks ago just writing what I felt.
Yeah.
Because it was like, that at least felt clear.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all there. We have to listen to our desires, everyone, please.
Listen to your desires. Mm.
Listen to your heart.
You guys, this is magical, as well it should be. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back to talk about magic, oracles, and prophecy in pop culture with our guest Amanda. Please stick around. You're listening to Pop Rocket.
Hi, I'm Janet Varney, and like many of you, brand new sentient robots excluded, I used to be a teenager. In fact, just about all of my friends were, too, including folks like comedian Danielle Radford.
And of course, all of us, you take on that theater accent, and our teacher would say, no, that isn't how people talk.
Right.
Don't do the super theater kid accent. It's the worst. But so when I was doing theater in high school, of course, I immediately was talking about being in the theater.
So join me every week on the JV Club podcast, where I speak with my favorite women artists, innovators, and humans as we reminisce about the past and how it led us to becoming who we are. Find it every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Winter Mishiraba,
Margaret Wappler,
Karen Tongson,
Amanda Yates Garcia.
And since we've got the Oracle of LA here in studio, we thought it would be appropriate to talk about the gift in pop culture, about magic, about oracles, about prophecy. And it is really hard in sort of narrative storytelling to integrate the idea of prophecy because it's getting ahead of the story, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that was what was so great about Cassandra and the Greek myth.
Yeah.
Like, nobody believed her, so it added some drama rather than if you're just saying, like, this is going to happen, and then it does.
It's narrative
kind of
suspension.
Not a great story. Yeah.
Well, there's something a little bit noir-y about it, just with the idea of, like, starting out at the dead body and then going back and figuring out.
It's like Memento, or I don't know if that happens in Memento.
Right now, probably the biggest example of sort of prophecy in pop culture is Game of Thrones, which
that's right.
It loves that, yeah, like
the Red Priestess.
Yes,
and it told us a bunch of stories for various people, and now we're sort of seeing some of them come true. Like Melisandre did die where she thought she would, and other things not come true. Was Cersei killed by the hand of the little brother?
I haven't seen that
episode
yet.
Maybe not.
You haven't seen the latest episode?
No.
Amanda is usually part of my Game of Thrones coven, but she could not make it this last episode. But yeah, okay, we won't spoil it. But I will just say, the Red Witch in general, I think, is a really good witch character because she's also dead wrong sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like she did the ultimate worst thing where, spoiler, she sacrifices a child, recommends...
That's very high on the list of bad things to do.
Yeah. Like, that is definitely disobeying the Wiccan laws of three, right?
Yeah, the
like,
Wiccan read. I don't think she's a...
She's not a Wiccan. Yeah, she's just like the Lord of
the
Light.
The Lord of Light is not a pagan goddess. I mean, no. You know, like...
It's just purely George R. R. Martin's.
I mean, the Lord of Light is pretty... I mean, she's like a Christian witch. Oh, yeah. I shouldn't say that, right? Okay.
I don't know.
But yeah. I mean, right? Because it's going from the multiple gods to the one god. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
But I just found like her and Ser Davos's relationship really interesting because he like wants to kill her at one moment and then he's also sort of blown away by her awesome power and then at the same time wants to kill her. It's like all wrapped up in one.
But you know, I really do think that her character really does get to something super interesting about divination and prophecy, which is that she did see what she saw was true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she just misinterpreted it because of her own lens that she was looking through. You know, it's very much like Macbeth, right? Where Macbeth, like the witches say to Macbeth, like, oh, you're going to be king. And right away he's like, oh, well, then I'm going to have to kill a king if I want to be king, which they didn't say that. They didn't say you have to kill the king and then you will be king. They were just like, you will be king. And he's like, well, the only way to have it done is that I kill him. So I think, you know, she was interpreting through her own lens. And that's something that, you know, we have to really try not to do when you're an oracle. Like, so oftentimes, even with my clients, like we were talking about this sort of off the air or a second ago, like there's times when I want to say to my clients, like, girl, dump him. It's not going to work out. But if I do say something like that, I'm like, as Amanda, I want to tell you, I think this guy is an asshole. As the oracle, I think that this relationship offers you an opportunity for growth that might not always be pleasant, but it will, if you listen to it, will make expand.
What are other, I mean, like, can I just throw a question out, like, can we think of like another example of like who are people we would or would not listen to, like who have that kind of power?
I would have listened to Tangina.
Tangina.
Oh, Poltergeist?
And Poltergeist.
But it didn't work all the way, right?
It did, ultimately, in the end.
Okay.
I would have listened to Tangina. They didn't really listen to Tangina.
No.
They
it's
weren't.
True. They don't, like, she kind of laid it out there. But
she was like, this house is safe, and she was wrong.
Oh, that's right.
like there was literally
okay, take
an
that
Indian
back. Completely
ground.
Take that. I forgot all about that part.
But maybe it was...
She seemed very authoritative.
You're right.
Maybe she was speaking from the perspective of the demons.
Maybe.
They're like, it's going to be so much safer for us if we have someone to persecute.
If we can go through your TV and mess with
you. Here's the plan.
Things will stay good.
Here's the strategy.
When it comes to like movie or TV oracles or witches, like my favorite story is Eve's Bayou because it starts with a hard like my dad's gonna die, but then you've got so like a none of the men in that movie matter because ladies are just telling them what's going to happen to them before it happens, and it's easy to forget.
Guy, that is heterosexual marriage.
I was gonna say, oh my god, Margaret has like my syllabus from Gender Studies 101.
But, like, Diane Carroll is, like, the witch outside the family that little Journey Smollett goes to. I just so love because it was, like, one of the most glamorous actresses of our time, sort of, like, with mud on her face, you know, just sort of putting hexes and killing people. And it was really fun. But there was that sense of sort of, like, aching acceptance over all of the characters, specifically like one of the characters, Aunt Moselle, who's just like, if I marry a man, he's gonna die. And it just sort of like, it was so optimistic and resigned at the same time, that movie.
Can I just throw one very contemporary of the minute example of this, like this sense of the tarot and all that that's circulating right now? And I know it's a movie that a lot of our Rocketeers have been very disappointed watching. And frankly, you know, at first I was super enthusiastic watching it too, but then I was just like, oh. But it is a little film called Wine Country on Netflix.
Oh boy!
And there is, I mean, come on. Like, there is an oracle played by Cherry Jones who does this reading, and there's a little tiny clip we have right here.
Death.
Jesus.
Fuck me.
Jesus.
You're fired.
No, I love this card because people always think that this is a very negative card. They're scared of it. But the death card actually indicates a time of transformation. The death of the old you to make way for the new. A metamorphosis. You're ready to become a butterfly. But it can also mean death is coming.
That is, I think, apropos, like that, you know, that is very apropos to our current situation. And I think that it's funny that, like, it harnesses, like, some of that language that you were talking about, Amanda, about, like, you know, figuring out how to frame this thing and contextualize it for people, this card, and then in the end just sort of being like, yeah, but you know, it could go this way.
Well, I it's so funny listening to that clip because like I totally use a lot of that language, right? Like, no, I love this card, but it's true, like often I really do love that card, although secretly I don't necessarily love it when I get it, but
sure.
No, I love the death card, I really do, but I think what's important, and
heart,
I don't mind
what
I get.
That's what all oracles say.
Hearts around the death card.
The death card is really great because it's like, you have to let go of that old thing so that you can move on and get the new thing. But what I don't think is good is that, you know, as an oracle, I think it's really important that when someone comes to me, they leave feeling empowered. That's always what I'm really trying to do. Mm. So I would never just say something to someone that's going to make them feel like, oh, I'm fucked. Like that is not what spirit wants of you. Okay, so spirit doesn't want you to be like, oh, I guess I'm going to sit back and just like let them get me and just cry and wallow. I mean, there's moments for that. But then you're going to rise up and self-realize, because that's really what we're being called to do. From my perspective, you know, when I say spirit, what I mean is the life force. And the life force wants to thrive. The life force wants to become the most magnificent version of itself that it can be. If you're a cockroach, you should be the most magnificent cockroach. You know, if you're Amanda Yates Garcia, you should be the most magnificent Amanda Yates Garcia that can be. So, you know, I would never want to say to a client that came in something that's like, yeah, you're just not going to do that great. Like, how is that at all useful?
I mean, I think that, like, I love that because even in our own readings, it's about, like, and I don't think that this was, like, blowing smoke up our
collective
asses, you know, or whatever. But I think that it is, I think it is about, like, giving you the tools to understand yourself better so that you can make the kind of spiritual and willful decisions that will get you to what your desires want.
That is,
you know.
But you know what you say, when you say that, it makes me think of course, one of the most famous oracles in The Matrix, right?
Oh,
where
yeah.
She does say, like, dude, you're not it. It's not going to happen for you. But she's knowing that if she says that, that that's going to trigger in him a feeling of disappointment. And when he feels that disappointment, that's when he starts to realize, oh, I do want this.
Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, I feel like you're always super sincere. Like, you would never do, like, a reverse psychology trick like that. But have you ever been tempted? Like, sense that about a person, that they need to sort of be told, like, oh, you're down and out, so that they can, like, rise back up?
I mean, I would never want to manipulate my clients. But yeah. I do think that there are times when you might say back to them what you hear them saying if they're like acting kind of defeatist or implying that they are that. And then they'll be like, oh, I really do want that thing, you know.
Yeah.
But like they might. Yeah.
So you're sort of like mirroring back to them what they're saying just so they can have like a clear perspective on what they're actually verbalizing.
Yeah, that's a big part of what I do, because also it's just really important, because a lot of the time I've had this experience multiple times that, you know, as an oracle, you are like you're like a movie screen in the sense that people project onto you a lot of whatever it is that they want to see or hear and or what they're afraid of seeing and hearing. So you could be like, yeah, you know, based on what I'm seeing here, it does look like there's a lot of opportunity in this relationship for you, and that there, it could be like a really great like place for you. And they'll be like, you think we're never going to be together? And you're like, no, I didn't say that. What are you talking about? You know, and then you're just worried that the person's going to go out and say to their friends, like, that oracle said that I'm never going to fall in love. And I'm like, I never said that you were never going to fall in love. But like, okay.
Right, right. Like, yeah, you're vulnerable to like what they're going to project. And it's like, it's the therapist's role of like whatever they project on you is to be talked about, you know?
You said that the spirit doesn't want us to cry and wallow, but which is the most cry and wallow card?
Oh. Like, well, the Five of Cups is like the grief card where you see someone literally crying. They're like faces in their hands and they're like crying and wallowing, and that's really what they're doing.
I was getting that so much in like years ago.
Really? And then you.
I was getting it too, like like about 5 years ago when I was actually literally living in like a space of like my I was in Five Cups.
But sometimes it feels good to cry and wallow, and it's true. I mean, the grief card, it's called the grief card, and we shouldn't just say, well, you shouldn't feel grief. Like, you should be happy. Like, pick yourself up by your bootstraps and, like, move on. Like, of course, grief is appropriate in certain circumstances. But there comes a point where maybe you're ready to move on. And that's when, in that card, you turn around and you see there's other cups still standing. Like, the cups that are spilt. And they're not going back. Like, the liquid's not going back in the cups. And you can cry about that, and maybe it's worth it. But then when you're ready, you can turn around and you can see there are still things of value in your life that you can focus on.
There are always more cups.
There's always more cups.
So many cups.
Go to the ocean.
I feel like we have to talk about the craft. Because we're all children of the 90s.
Yeah.
And Fairuza Balk, if I'm remembering correctly, is actually like a real deal Wiccan.
Yeah. I guess she gives readings sometimes at like House of Intuition.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. She just like pops in there and is just like, yeah, I'll do some readings.
Maybe she does some cameo appearances there.
I love it. Well,
but you know, I have to say, I do not love that movie.
Why?
Because it gets evil.
Because every time I do an interview, they bring that up and they say,
"Sorry, Amanda."
Yeah, Margaret.
Well, I can do this to her because we love each other.
And they say, so you know, whenever I do like public rituals and stuff, they say, "Did you get your ideas from the craft?" And I'm like, "No, they got their ideas from us." You think the writers just made that up off the top of their head? They read books about witchcraft and then they wrote it and then they like changed it around, and now everybody asks me if I get my ideas from the craft. No, they got their ideas from me, not
well,
me
they
personally.
Got their, yeah, they got their
us.
Ideas from Wicca in general, right?
Right.
I mean,
witchcraft,
there was apparently like some kind of like Wiccan teacher like on staff. Like
yeah,
I just read this today,
which
I was like, okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems fun.
That seems like 90s conscientiousness.
Yes,
yeah.
Sure.
Thank you so much for coming and joining
Thank
us for this
for
conversation.
Me.
All right, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We're gonna be right back after this.
Genre film fans, hear me. I know you're out there. Do not be ashamed of your love for gore, action, sci-fi, or fantasy. It's time to come out of the shadows, because on Switchblade Sisters, we celebrate our love for genre films. I'm film critic April Wolf. Each week, I have a conversation with a different female filmmaker about their fave genre film, and we cover film craft, getting projects off the ground, working with actors, and our general love for genre movies. I've had so many great guests, like Heather Graham.
In the past, it's like so many films are made by men that the female point of view is not always respected, which is why why all these stories haven't come out till now.
Jennifer's body director, Karin Kusama.
I think there's a lot more fantasy and a lot more expectation projected onto a woman director.
Comedian and actor, Kate Berland.
I mean, it sounds so cheesy to talk about it in yourself, like, you just keep going. You're, you know, I'm just a vessel. Like, I just do it. You know, I don't think, but like, that is what it is.
And many others. So check out Switchblade Sisters every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Brandon. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell-Rorba,
Margaret Wappler,
and Karen Tongson. Oh, wait.
And Amanda Gaze Garcia.
Mm. And every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what is your current jam? So I turn to you, Winna Mitchell, and I ask you, what's your jam?
I don't actually have a jam today. I actually have a quote. Oh. And this quote meant something to me today, and it will mean something to me forever as we transition. It's from James Baldwin. Any real change implies the breakup of the world as one has always known it. The loss of all that gave one an identity, the end of safety. And at such a moment, unable to see and not daring to imagine what the future will now bring forth, one clings to what one knew or dreamed that one possessed. Yet it is only when a man is able, without bitterness or self-pity, to surrender a dream he has long possessed that he is set free. He has set himself free. For higher dreams, for greater privileges.
I love it.
Love you, Boo.
Yeah, that's
love
so
you too.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Amanda, do you have a jam?
Yeah, so I've been listening to Govinda JJ by Alice Coltrane a lot. Ooh. Do you guys know that song?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's so good. And one of the reasons that I, well, one of the reasons why I listen to it a lot is because it just, impossible to be sad listening to that song. So I use it a lot as like house clearing music as well, like to clear the energy in a space. Like as soon as you put that on, you just feel like she and her people come in and like elevate you and open things up and clear things out. So I often recommend it as a kind of medicine for my clients who, you know, sometimes it's good to be sad and mourning is important, you know, if you're going through grief. But then there's some moments where you're just like, I just can't be in this space. Like, I can't handle it. And I feel like she will come and like her spirit will lift you out of that space. So that's what I'm recommending today.
Oh, man, wow. This is the most L.A. show we've ever done.
We just, like, decided to lean back into it. Yeah.
I just embrace that so much, you know? Like,
yeah,
I just feel like
I'm
California and I'm ready to go.
Generation California.
Seventh generation.
There you go.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah, so I feel like I'm into California.
Yeah.
That's why everybody moves here, because it's so great. So they can make fun all they want.
It's
but
true.
I'm like so really Don Draper at Esalen crossing
oh
his legs.
Oh my God, yes. I am so there with you. Please.
Margaret, you got a jam?
I do. I was really struggling with this week's jam because I was like, this is the penultimate episode. Like, what do I play? It has to mean so much. And I was getting stuck. And then David, in his ultimate wisdom, reminded me of the song that we've been listening to from Wasteblood, a singer-songwriter named Natalie Maring, and it's called A Lot's Gonna Change. Mm. And the lyrics really speak to me, and the big build of the song really speak to me. So this is from her recent album, Titanic Rising.
Thank you.
The song is so beautiful, and part of the reason I wanted to play it, and my instincts are right, because I had a feeling Karen would respond to this song because it's so Karen Carpenter-esque. Yes. Like, it's just a really beautiful, soaring ballad.
Yes, and I've been, like, kind of tweeting into the ether about, like, how I was asked recently, like, who do you think is carrying the mantle of Karen Carpenter? And I didn't have an answer until this album came out.
Nice.
This song, the overdubbing. And actually, I know several other music journalists who are interviewing her in Weisblatt about the Karen Carpenter thing. So
it's
just lush and
beautiful.
See,
and I never saw your tweets.
We never talked about
this. We're just
this.
On the
We're
continuum.
Just on it.
Yeah.
Ooh, spiritual sisters.
I love that.
Mm. Karen, you got a jam?
I do have one, and it's also what I've been listening to a lot now, and there's an album that just came out by a band called Vampire Weekend. You may have feelings about them.
I used to live in their house.
Well, oh, wow. Well, there you go. Another connection. And this song is with another figure who I brought up a lot in my time at Pop Rocket.
I'm going to ask Amanda for that hot tea later.
Yeah.
But...
Danielle Heim. And the song is called We Belong Together from their new album, Father of the Bride.
We go together like Keats and Yates, bowls and plates, days and days. We stay united like these old states. It's how we go together. We belong together. We
Baby, it don't mean we stay together, but we belong together.
That's so great.
I felt that sentiment.
That's my feeling to all of you. And as I said about this album, I'm so glad Vampire Weekend decided to go full Indigo Girls between 97 to 2000. And I love it. And I do feel that way. We belong together even if we don't stay together. And isn't that the tragedy of every love story? And that's the story of Pop Rocket.
Oh, that breaks my heart. That's really true.
It's been a very strange time to sort of like look back over the like four and a half, almost 5 years that we've spent together and like try to take stock of it, try to be like, you know, what is this? What has this meant to me? And for me, one of the things that was always loveliest is this process. I mean, every summer, I would force the other people on the panel to help me decide what my summer jam was.
Oh, the war!
And
the war of 2016.
And also just sort of opening that up to the people who listen, to our Facebook group, to Twitter, and ask all of these random people all around the world to do cultural labor for me. And I've just loved it so much. And it's like, you know, the playlists for every summer since we've started are these things I treasure, you know? Like when Liz Andre told me that there was a little girl from New Zealand that I should be paying attention to called Lord, you know, all of these things were just like such wonderful.
From Lord to Lizzo.
From Lord to Lizzo.
The story of Pop Rocket.
And I...
I'm penning it up right now.
And so for this penultimate jam of mine, I wanted to go with... the summer jam that presented itself most resoundingly and which we were barely powerful to hold back from taking its mantle. And you guys have, in so many ways, at so many times.
She won!
I am very confused because the script says Malamente by Rosalia.
I had done Malamente before. I forgot that.
And I did it,
well,
too.
Well, and we've done Cut to the Feeling many times. But I also just, like, I mean, the one unsung Pop Rocket Seal of Approval winner. The person who really implicitly always had it was Carly Rae Jepsen.
I mean,
maybe for Guy and me, actually. I only speak for the homosexuals in the room.
I don't know if I can get behind it, but I'm working on it. We have one more show left to completely embrace Carly Rae.
Oh, there's going to come a grim moment, Amanda, decades from now, when an aged Guy Branum and Margaret Wappler are going to face each other on the street, and she's going to have been listening to Carly Rae, and he's going to have been really appreciating Radiohead, and we'll both understand that there is no such thing as meaning, and life is but random cards pulled from a deck. You have been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Margaret Wappler, Winner Mitchell Rohrbaugh, and Karen Tarson. And get Karen's book, Why Karen Carpenter Matters. It's on Amazon. It's all over. It's really good. And of course, Amanda Yates Garcia, where can people learn more about you?
www.oracleoflosangeles.com. Sign up for my newsletter and you'll hear all my things. Thanks. Oh, also, please listen to my podcast, Strange Magic.
It's so good. Like, even if you don't have as much interest in tarot as you might think, you will still learn so much from this podcast because it is involving mythology, pop culture, psychology. Like, it touches on so many things, which makes you realize, oh, tarot is about much more than a card deck.
And pre-order my book, Initiated, coming out in October. Pre-orders really, really, really help people stay alive as writers. So please do pre-order Initiated, Memoir of a Witch on Amazon.
Yes. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Izzy Music. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews in iTunes. If you haven't already, it is almost too late, but not quite. Do it for posterity's sake, okay?
Have your say.
Margaret's biographer needs information, okay, to understand the variations in her bone density. Mm-hmm. This week, we would like to thank Spring Birdie. They said, this podcast, the brilliant host and generous guests, provide me with all the party conversations I could ever want. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to us, Spring Birdie. If you've missed any of our last shows, brace yourself. Next week will be our last episode. So if you ever thought about calling my mom and leaving a message, now is the time. We have loved doing the show for nearly 5 years now and have been grateful for our listeners for your feedback and your great pop culture tips. So if you'd like to call in and share any of your thoughts about the show, we really want to hear from you. The number is, again, 530-237-4108. You can also record a message on your phone's voice memo app and send us the audio via email at poprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Please find and add all of us on Twitter. If you go to @poprocket, you can find our individual handles. You can also join the Facebook group. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our senior producer is Laura Swisher.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Being the one is just like being in love. No one can tell you you're in love. You just know it through and through, balls to bone.